This paid commercial may not represent the views of Hubbard Broadcasting Incorporated or Federal News Radio. Statements and opinions of this broadcast are solely those of individual contributors or advertisers as indicated. Federal News Radio does not take responsibility for those statements or opinions and accepts no responsibility or liability for any inaccuracy, errors, or omissions reported during this program.
Welcome to For Your Benefit, presented by NITP, the federal leader in retirement planning seminars. Join NITP this morning for an hour of plain talk on planning your future. You've got questions, they've got answers.
Good morning and welcome to For Your Benefit. We're here to talk this morning about life coaching, mediation, not legal, career, and other salient points with Michael Townshend. And he is the president of Carpe Diem. Did I say that right?
Yes.
Inc. Good morning, Michael.
Good morning, Bob.
And we're going to have a great show, and we have the ever-popular Tammy Flanagan joining us. And we're co-hosts, Tammy and I. Tammy, of course, is the... What are you, Tammy?
I'm the benefits director for NITP. Good morning, Bob.
Good morning. And she's being modest. She's also a weekly GovExec columnist, lecturer... Famous lecturer and a good friend. Good morning. And
stay busy.
Yeah, you sure do. And besides doing a lot of volunteer work for charitable organizations.
I do that too.
Okay, Michael. Life coaching. Is that kind of like sports, or is it kind of like coaching for life, or is it all the above?
Well, I wouldn't compare it necessarily to sports. What I would suggest, however, is that most of us live our lives reflexively, meaning that we sort of see what comes each day and then react to it. And I don't think that that's the only or the best approach. I think an approach in which we, each of us, take some time to reflect about who we are, what matters to us, what kinds of options are there in the world, and therefore, what would we best be suited to do, both for work, for relationships, for where to live, and so forth, that those kinds of things are ripe for reflection. Having said that, the best kind of reflection is reflection that we can do where an interested third party, but not involved third party, so an interested third party can hear what we're saying and guide us and help us to hear ourselves effectively. That is what a coach, particularly a life coach, really does. We spend most of our lives or most of our time working with individuals who are making a plan for how their life will unfold. And it can start at any juncture, because ideally it would be wonderful if a person started that somewhere out of high school, and then planned accordingly and made corrections as time went along and circumstance occurred. But at any point somebody, can find value in, as I say, self-reflection with the help of an objective third party.
Michael, are there tools that you use to help someone in that? Are there assessments or
things
like that? Is that how you begin, like by providing an assessment tool?
Sure. And in fact, that is the start, to get a grounding or a set point for what the person, oftentimes the assessment instruments, and there's a lot of them. There's a couple of dozen that are used by different psychologists and by people in my profession. I have a couple of particular ones that I enjoy or I find them most useful. However, all of them are essentially measuring traits that the individual is expressing by answering questions. I have to stop there and say, I have no idea why that works, but it does. smarter minds than mine have put together these instruments, we call them instruments, but these tests that at the end of the test, when scored, they paint a picture of what the person's desirable, or excuse me, what they would most likely be happy and successful doing in any particular area. And I would go one step further and say that most people, in my experience, who take these, including myself, that when we get the responses or that we get the answer, we usually, 90% of it, we say to ourselves, oh, yeah, that's right. Mm-hmm. Oh, I knew that about myself. Oh, sure. But there'll be something. There will be something that'll surprise us, perhaps, almost always.
Well, I think part of the key is, too, knowing how to interpret those results. Because I know I've given my kids, you know, they're always like, well, I don't know what I want to do. I don't know what college I want to go to. So I've bought the books and said, here, read this and take this, you know, evaluation. I think the counselors at high school give it to them as well. But I don't think we go that step further and evaluate it. So I don't know what this means. You know, yes,
sure.
You got a woo factor, whatever that means. So how do you apply that to work choices or education choices or even life after retirement choices as what we deal with in our everyday work?
I think yes to all those points, and I would add that one of the questions that I get from people who are retired or who are about to retire, considering retirement, one of the questions that they pose is, who will I be once I retire? What will I be like? I know what I'm like on the job, and I know who I am there. Mm-hmm. I just am not sure who I'm going to be or what I'll be like when I retire. And what I share with most people is that in every case that I'm aware of, when we retire, we are no one different. We are the same person. Mm-hmm. And there is a retirement activity to be planned or set of activities that will respond to who we are, which is why when one is doing the work to prepare for retirement, it's critical, I think, to do some assessment testing, get good feedback about that assessment testing so as to be clear as to what are the activities that will be most enjoyable for you and I would add, for those who are in a committed relationship, that both should be doing these tests and these assessments together.
Together, yeah.
So that the answers will fit both, and both may have a role in each of the activities. But again, best if done with data. I am very data driven, and to me, I personally wouldn't take those steps without. And I didn't when I retired. One of the first steps that I took was to go to, well, frankly, Montgomery College, because it's a neighbor of mine and I used to teach there, but I called up their career center and said, what assessment tests do you have available? And they told me, and they had one that is one of my favorites, the Holland test. And so I said, well, would you allow me to take it? And they charged me a couple of bucks, but yes. And I went to, I took it. They got the results. They gave me the feedback. And all of that feedback, interestingly, reinforced everything that I had been doing up until that time, with one exception, which was that the second thing in the listing of job, what they call job families, that people like me, people who score like I do, generally are happy with, the very second one said ADR, and I said to the instructor, well, what is that? What does that mean? And she said, oh, that means alternative dispute resolution, which can be anywhere. There's a constellation of options, but the most common ones are mediation, arbitration, those kinds of, and facilitation are the three major approaches. And She said it's basically the test is saying, you told the test
that this
is the kind of thing that you would do well, the people who score like you score mm-hmm. would do well at something like that. And for me, this was a true aha. Because I hadn't thought of it, didn't really know much about it. And so I started the research and found out that it wasn't difficult to become one. And so I took some courses and got certified and took some specialties. My specialization is in elder issues. Mm-hmm. And so I work now with the families of elders to help them talk to each other about how to be supportive of the elder.
Wow. Do you ever get into dysfunctional families?
Almost 100%. Almost 100%.
What family is not dysfunctional but, to some extent?
To the point sometimes they don't talk to each other fighting over parent issues. Mm-hmm. And
well, I think that's what you're trying to avoid.
How do you get them back to be being a unit rather than two units?
Well, I think the process is helpful, meaning having an objective third party in the room who is trained in human communication, and that person, perhaps me, someone who does not have a dog in the fight, but who understands the dynamics that are probably going on in the room. I'll tell you that just a couple of weeks ago, I had a case where there was a family of seven. There were seven of us in the room. There wasn't a single person in the room under age 50. So this was an older family. They were there for their mother who had an issue relative to need to make a decision about her care and her housing and so forth. And she was in her early 90s somewhere. So the others in the room, the other five or six who came into the room, again, adult children, were, and I had been told before I arrived, but I saw it within a few minutes of each one speaking. We went around the room, each one speaking, and it was clear that what had happened was their pattern emerged, meaning their family pattern, which usually is driven by birth order, and each person essentially was reverting to
back
who
to
they were.
Childhood days.
Yes, we and so
the
one
eldest
of,
was the boss.
The eldest sister at one point early on was scolding her younger brother, her baby brother, mm-hmm. who was 55, by the way, and scolding him for being, there you go again, mm-hmm. you know, that kind of thing.
Oh, I can relate to that.
Really?
And so,
not
yeah.
on my side, but my husband.
Of course.
Well, we've gone through this.
And it happens. And the thing is that, and the reason I enjoy doing this work is that in fact, the reason we're really there is for the sake of the elder, mm-hmm. not for the sake of this communication between the group. But mm-hmm. if we can't get past that, then they're not even hearing what the elder's need is, mm-hmm. or, very importantly, what their desire is, because no one was asking, because she's 90-something, and they weren't asking, what does she want? What would she like to be the outcome, and how can we make that happen? But it was interesting that once I said, please, everyone, for a moment, give me the floor and let me point out that, number one, we're not talking about mom yet, and we've been here for 25 minutes, and we have yet to talk about mom. I would just point that out. And that, secondly, I have talked with mom, and apparently each of you has too. And whether you're hearing it or not, she has a very strong desire for the outcome of this moment for mm-hmm. her. And what she's looking for from you is no more arguing, but she's looking for support. And we're still talking about who's going to sit in what chair. We're not yet talking about how will we support mom's desire. So anyhow, I love doing that work. I do it pro bono.
That
it's
sounds
not
like a really
that,
good way to help a family come together, because nobody wants to be the one to make decisions. And
exactly.
You want it to be in the best interest of the person you're looking out for.
Mm-hmm.
How would somebody go about finding someone like you if they're not in the D.C. area? Because I know we have a lot of listeners outside of this area that might be looking for that kind of assistance.
Yeah, there is a, if they have access to a computer, and if they Google mediation, just the word, mediation, they will find the ACR, the American Council for whatever the R is. it's the professional.
Relationships.
Or something. and the National Association has a listing, excuse me, with specialties of certified mediators.
Right.
And they'll
the
find
elder
the elder, those that are, and one of the categories is elder issue.
Mm-hmm.
They call
that's
them elder
great.
Issues.
Yeah,
now, within elder issues, there are specialties. Mine is family work. But another one, and listeners might be interested in this, there are some folks who do elder issues, but whose specialty has to do with elder care. And that's what, after their names, it'll say elder care. That's a little different. That is basically advocating for the elder when they are in a nursing home or some helping facility where they may need more than what they're getting, or something other than what they're getting, and it's somebody to advocate for them to get that when often, again, they cannot be heard. And in many cases, and it is unfortunate, but that in many cases, elders don't have a family anymore, or maybe ever did.
That's true. Sometimes they're the last one left.
So, yes. So that's what, so people who, there are people who do that if anybody needs
that. I know a lot of people going through this, when you reach a certain age, you meet a lot of people that are of that age whose parents are of that age.
That's why I started off at the top. I'm going through that as we speak. But for those listening, you can call Michael. You can call Tammy. You can call me, but I probably want to talk to those two. We're at 202-465-3080. 202-465-3080. It's 10:22. It's May 9th, 2011. Do not call us after 10:58 and a half because we won't be here, and we'll give you the email address to get us. Michael, Michael is president of Carpe Diem Coaching Life Coach. Tammy Flanagan, senior benefit director, NITP, and Bob Lines, tax and finance type. Michael, can I switch it to the other end of the spectrum?
Sure.
Because although we are, I would say dominantly when you say, Tammy, a pre-retirement firm, but we're doing more and more mid and beginning career. Do you ever do coaching at the beginning career level? Somebody graduate. I'm an accountant. I don't like accounting. But I figured it was something that would open the door, and then I wound up doing tax work, and I like tax work. Not heavy, heavy-duty tax work. But I liked it, and, you know, I've done it all my life and scared to death of public speaking and got thrown into the fire and love it. And I think, you know, Tammy never had trouble with public speaking.
Oh, yes, I did.
But I remember when Tammy and I first met, Tammy says, I don't know Social Security like I should. I don't know if you remember this.
Well, I didn't know it at all. I was a civil service benefit specialist years and years ago.
And I said, you're smart, but you probably know more than the class. Give it a try. And here she is now teaching the best of the best of not only benefits, but Social Security as well. Anyway, so let's get back to the individual that's somewhat beginning career, maybe not right out of school. And they're just, you know, they like the job, but maybe they would like something better. Are there tests that they can take to say, all right, I'm an accountant, but
really
heavens forbid. But, you know, in that world, what would I fit into, or is this really the world for me?
Well, yes, the assessments are available, applicable, and effective for people at all points in their life, I believe. And the specific one that they should take would be, and often, by the way, high schools today do offer them. They'll have the license to be able to give those, so they don't have to spend any money and in fact, going back to your local high school, or if you graduated from college, you can go to your local college excuse me, to your alma mater, and they may be able to give you that testing at no cost, mm-hmm. once again, at any point in your career, so that there are a couple of them. Even the Holland is now available online, mm-hmm. and can be done in the privacy of your own home. And in fact, the results will come up. I don't think that's as effective as having somebody give you the feedback, but they do a pretty reasonable report. And that, in case anyone's interested, that Holland test at any age is available at www.livecareer.com. livecareer.com. It's free. I tell all my audiences that the reason it's free is because there's advertisement all over every single page. That's how they pay for it, obviously. But if you want to get it for free, it will give you a report at the end. Mm-hmm. I found the report. I did it myself, and I found the report pretty similar, if not almost identical, to the one that I got for $75 at Montgomery College. Mm-hmm. Now they offer another one, and you can pay some money and get more in-depth reporting. But anyhow, it is available online. I do recommend it for people at various points in their career. I took those when I came out in high school, but the tests weren't as good then, and I was in high school in the early 60s. And the tests that they were giving then, I don't remember which ones they were, but they are long since obsolete. But I think mine came back and said I should be a nun. Or it would have something. And I had several problems with that outcome. Two in particular. Anyhow, but these tests have become much more effective. They're very well put together, and they give great results, which in the end is what matters. And Bob, to specifically answer your question, I think that there is no point in life when, at the very least, what taking the test will do is validate
what you're already doing.
What you may already be doing. And if not, it may give you food for thought. I am not a believer that that this is linear or rote, meaning that if you get a result, you have to do that. Mm-hmm. No, because there are other things, to take into consideration. However, it's a data point. It's a data point that I think one ought to pay attention to, and not enough people avail themselves of it.
What if I'm listening, which of course I am, but somebody will be listening to this in the off hours, if you will. They rebroadcast the show fairly often. Mm-hmm. How does one get in touch with you?
Easiest way is at my website, which is www.mybestdayistoday.com. My best day is today.
No spaces, all one word.
No spaces, all run together. That is certainly one way. Another would be at my AOL account, which is also easy, but you'd have to know my name, because
that's
my name.
Easy.
Mike Townsend. Bob said Townshend because it looks like that, but it's a silent H. So now I've totally confused the listener. It's MikeTownsend, Townshend, what appears to be, Mike Townsend, no underlines or dashes, at AOL.com. Yes, I'm that old-fashioned.
All right, talking about old-fashioned, what if I have an old-fashioned phone?
Well, then why don't you just call me?
And that number is?
That number would be 301-598-1723. 301-598-1723.
Michael, there's a couple other things we wanted to talk about today, and one is called a personal care contract. It's something mm-hmm. you mentioned at the seminars when you give workshops on people planning for their life after retirement. Can you tell us a little bit about what is a personal care contract and why would I need one?
Sure. You know, most of the planners advocate a state created and sanctioned agreement, which is called a living will mm-hmm. or advance directive.
You've expressed your wishes about?
Yes, those are instructions to one's health care providers. However, I created some years ago, just as I retired, I got sick, and there was a high possibility that it would be terminal. Therefore, I went home to get my affairs in order. And one of the things I realized was that really, as a guy who's been single for 20 some years, again, who's my son, who's 30 years old, really doesn't know what my wishes are and so forth. In the event that I survived the upcoming open heart surgery, there was a possibility that I would veg and or anyhow be in need of assistance for the rest of my life. If that were to happen, it didn't. Here I sit. But if that were to happen, I realized that nobody really knew what I would want. What are the things that I would want? And I mean in terms of how long would I want to live on my own? How long would I want to be surrounded by my own things? What are the things to watch for to know that it's time for me to be upgraded to another level of care and so forth? Not as much having to do with health, frankly, as having to do with cognition, mm-hmm. More so. And that is not an area that that the living will addresses very strongly. So mm-hmm. I wanted to be very clear about that. And so I started out by writing a letter to my son mm-hmm. To let him know what my wishes were. And somewhere along the line of writing that, over the course of a day, as I wrote the different things that I cared about and that I thought would be important for him to know, I turned it into an actual contract. Mm-hmm. And took to my lawyer, who our fax said to him, and he called and said, well, okay, that's a contract. That's there's no money changing hands, but you are expressing your wishes. If you're going to, I signed it. I got my son to sign it. I got my two brothers and two sisters to sign it so that everybody knew just what I wanted. And I'll tell you partly why. I am not a person who wants ever to be laying in a bed somewhere, surrounded by folks, unable to communicate with them, mm-hmm. and have them have to fantasize, frankly,
figure out
what it is that I would want. Mm-hmm. Because I know what happens in most of those cases, two very important things. First of all, they really say what they would want, not what I would want. Mm-hmm. And secondly, and this very important to me, they will have to live with the results of that determination, whether it's to pull a plug or to whatever drastic thing they're contemplating doing. I don't want anyone to be put into that position. So I spelled out, here are the things, here's how long to feed me, here's how long to keep me going, under what set of circumstances. And I tried to be as specific as possible, sent it to the lawyer, he sent it back with some additional thoughts and some other things to add in. Mm-hmm. I got all that done. Now, and by the way, one of the paragraphs of the contract is about my car keys. Meaning, if I come out of all this, and I start driving again, which did happen, but it was many, many months later. Mm-hmm. When I start driving again, still someday, one of you is going to have to tell me that I should no longer be driving. I know that. I had to do that with my dad. Mm-hmm. So I understand what that's like, and I know how difficult that conversation is. So I went to the website of the NTSB, the National Transportation Safety Board. Right on that website, they list, it's 8 or 9 characteristics, things, behaviors to observe, that when you see these things, that person shouldn't be driving. Essentially, is what it says.
Mm-hmm. Would that be the visual of the car?
That's one of them.
Dents?
That's one unexplainable dents. It's one thing if you get into one accident, but if you have continual accidents and small fender denters, that's one of them. Being in the car and not sure on a well-known route whether to go left or right. Mm-hmm. Those kinds of things. It actually spells out those kinds of things.
So it's clear to you and the other person that this isn't just my opinion. This is really some guidance.
So
That's a good idea.
I was behind one of those this morning. Had I known.
You could have knocked on the window and said, hey.
Say, where's your contract? Yeah. And now back to the purpose of the contract. That addition to the contract, I specifically wanted it to inform my loved ones or those who care about me about what they can observe that would force that conversation, number one. And number two, to ease the conversation, I said to them, bring the contract.
Say, look, you
hold it up
this
to me and say, well, Pop, which is what they call me, Pop, this is what you said.
Mm-hmm, this is your idea.
This is what you wanted.
Yep, this isn't
and
us.
We have now seen these things. Mm-hmm. Give them over. And I specified in there that they were to demand my keys. They were to sell the car, to send the money back to me. You have to specify that in my family. and so forth. Now, I know, and I see the look in everybody's eyes and every audience that I talk about this to. I know that credulity. Look, will it work? I don't know. I haven't gotten to that point. Mm-hmm. What I know is that it's my best shot at organizing in advance my thoughts and conveying them as clearly as possible to others. As my lawyer said, when I asked him, is this a binding contract? And he just smiled and said, Mike, it's like most contracts. They're only as good as the intention of the people who signed it.
And I think it's like anything in life. You can be reactive or you can be proactive. And I think that's taken a step to be proactive in planning for your future, as we do with financial planning and all the other things we do to plan. This is another area that we don't necessarily want to have to plan for, but it's inevitable. If we live long enough, we may have to reach that point.
Gets back to that famous Joe Sullender comment, right? It's all a series of moving parts.
That's right.
He said that one day. Financial planning is just part of a series of moving parts.
And well, I share with my audiences the outline, not the detail. That would be a little personal. But the outline to include the piece from about NTSB.
That's good.
And all they do is if they attend one of my workshops, I give them my website, my email address. And they send me an email, and I get several after each one asking for a copy of that. Mm-hmm. And I hope it helps them to get started. Now, if anyone listening would like to look this up, I'm not the only one that's done this, it turns out. And if they Google life care contracts, they will get several references to other people who have done something similar. And so look among that. Mm-hmm. With any luck, mine may come up as well.
Now, there is another thing that you talk about called a financial roadmap.
Yes.
Now, I know, you know, financial planners have different ways of setting goals and objectives for financial planning, but yours is a little different, right? So what would be a financial roadmap that we need to get together or think about?
I'm glad you asked about that because, first of all, let me tee it up with a little background. When we are contemplating retirement, there are a number of things that I think all of us need to pay attention to include reviewing our will. That's a darn good time to take a look at, dust it off, take a look and see if it's still pertinent and if it's still your wishes. That's a good time to review your living will if you did one some years ago. It's a good time to take a look at your finances. But there are people, particularly from NITP, who do workshops that help you on that piece. Mm-hmm. Now, having said that, in the background, here's something that goes on. I've noticed, and I'll bet you have too, that in most, not all, but most human relationships that have formed into a partnership. So whatever the definition may be, a spouse, a significant other, someone that we become partnered with, that when that occurs, there are certain tasks that are primarily engaged in by one of the couple on behalf of the partnership. And one of those things is money. And we'll call that person Moneybags. Now, Moneybags is the person who generally, throughout the course of the relationship, has made sure that checks have been deposited, that bank statements have been balanced, that bills have been paid, the insurances are up to date, savings have been added to meet our goals, et cetera, et cetera. That person is Moneybags, is generally who takes care of that. In my relationship, I was not Moneybags. And I lived a glorious life as a result, because the person to whom I was attached was
the money
detailed bag. Mm-hmm. And money bags, and she kept it all going, and I would have to, she gave me an allowance and like that. Now that's how bad I am. So that's how I happen to know that this happens. But here's the fly in the oil. Of course. We all know, but nobody wants to say it, but we all know that when we retire, we move on in life, we're not gonna both get to the end together. One will die first. And if the one who dies first is Moneybags,
then we're in trouble.
Yes, indeed. The other is left sometimes blowing in the wind. Doesn't know where anything is, knows or believes that there is something, but not sure where, how much, how to access it, what are the codes, what are the passwords, et cetera, et cetera.
Yep.
Knowing that that was the case, even though I had have been divorced for 20-some years, but I knew that if I died a couple of years ago, if I died at that point, no one would know how to pay for anything, how to, my records were totally scattered, as my brain is. And so I thought, well, you know, I need to do them a favor. I need to do my family a favor. And so right now, and so I sat down and took, an afternoon, got all the records, all my financial records together, and I created a chart, a basic, word chart, table where it was several columns. The first column had the title of each of my accounts, the cash accounts, the savings accounts, the investment accounts, the insurances, and so forth. Everything right down in a row. The next column over had the account numbers for each. The next column over had a key contact and or phone number. If I knew it, they didn't all. The next one was the URL, the address, the internet address for that company. Mm-hmm. They all had that. The next was my username, and the final one was my password for each. And I did this out, and it was everything. And I titled it The Roadmap.
Good.
Now, interestingly, my son, who takes after his dad, is not Moneybags in his relationship. Mm-hmm. I've known that for some time. And so on the morning.
Now everybody else does.
And now everyone else does. And his wife is laughing if she's listening to this. But she should, because, I went the morning he came to pick me up to go for the operation. I asked him to come inside, take a moment, come inside. I want to show you something. And I took him into my den and showed him a box where I'd put all the files in one place, which they are to this day, in one place.
Good.
And on the top was this roadmap. And I said to him, if I die today, or when I die, not if, when I die, you are to come to my home, wherever I'm living at that point, and find my den. I'll have one wherever I am. Open the closet door, and there will be this box.
This box.
Take the paper from the top of the box and give it to your wife. She will know what to do with it. He smiled. knowing he that knew. I knew. Of course he knew. We always do. We non-moneybags. And I've been telling each of my audiences about that.
His wife should do that, too. So just in the event, unlikely event, something happened to her, that he would know what to do as well.
No, the likely event. Actually, the likely event. Yeah. Because someday that will be the case.
Someday it will happen. Yeah.
And part of why I think people don't think of something even this simple, and part of the reason I think we don't, not to get on a soapbox, but I can't help it. There's a microphone in front of my face. I think part of the reason is this existing taboo in our society about the topic of death, as though it's not going to happen, as though we are immortal, even though we all would laugh and say, oh, of course not. And then if you quickly say, yeah, well, what have you done about it?
Nothing.
Are you prepared? And you're like, well, it's a little soon, don't you think? Soon? You're 80 years old. What do you mean soon? But people think that way throughout their lives, and I know I did, until the day that a doctor said to me, in 2 days, we are going to put you under the knife. You may or may not come out of it.
Make it. Yeah.
We don't know.
With all that, somebody's got to call. 202-465-3080. 202-465-3080. That was great. And how do they get in touch with you? Just quickly, the phone number.
301-598-1723.
And the email.
Mike Townsend, which is spelled MikeTownsend at AOL.com.
Great. That was very good.
Yeah, it's things that we all need to think about, and we just, like you said, we either kind of put up a wall that we don't want to talk about it, or we just don't take the time to do it. So it's something.
I remember when my father passed, he was a federal employee, and I didn't know whether he had a survivor's annuity or not. This is well before NITP. And I dug through all these papers. There was no roadmap.
Yes.
And neither one were money bags. Mm-hmm. And I finally found the piece of paper that says, yes, he did. And I said, whew.
One of the questions that come up at my seminars, we talk about updating your beneficiary forms.
Mm-hmm.
And some of the students, they'll say, well, where do I find who my current beneficiary is? And I just look at them because I'm thinking, well, didn't you get an employee copy of those beneficiary forms? And aren't those in a nice three-ring binder? See, I'm the one that likes to keep things organized. And I just can't imagine somebody wouldn't have kept all of those together in one place. But apparently a lot of employees just left it up to the agency to maintain the employer copy.
Mm-hmm.
And who's going to know who the beneficiary is if the paperwork's not able to be found? So I think this is great timely
advice.
I would
go one step further. I agree with you. And I would go one step further and add that if we have not looked at our beneficiary for any of our policies, if we have not looked at our beneficiary information if you can't remember the last time, then now is the time.
Time to.
If you don't have it yourself, then request it from HR, from Human Resources. Mm-hmm. They either will have it for you, or in some cases it's automated now, so they'll give you the way to get to it. You take a look at that, and the reason I recommend doing that is, at least again from my own experience, I have had it happen that when I looked at my will, which I had been saying for years, oh no, I'm all set on the will and so forth. The will that I had when I actually took it out of my safety deposit box and read it, which is, by the way, a very stupid place to keep it, because how would anybody
nobody
ever
can
have
get
gotten
into
to
your
it?
Safety deposit
Thank you.
Box.
That only occurred to me when I thought I was dead, or soon to be. Anyhow, when I read it, I realized that I had forgotten what was in it.
Mm-hmm.
I had forgotten. And what I had was actually a copy, a carbon copy of a document that I filled out in 1969 when I left for Southeast Asia from Marine Corps Base in California. Before getting on the plane, each of us had to fill out a form that was, and any veterans who are listening, you know the one I mean. You cannot get on the plane unless you fill out this fill-in-the-blank
where you want everything
will
to go. Yeah.
And so forth, basically designating for your survivor benefits, but also the rest of it. And you sign it, and they take the original and give you the copy. And I still had that. And I had somewhere along the line put it into a safety deposit box and never looked at it again. And here we were 40 years later when I thought, well, you know, I just might die now. I think it's out of curiosity. I keep saying I have it. Well, there it was. I was relieved to see the piece of paper, but I opened it up and read it. I don't even remember who those people were that I had left things to. I think they were bong buddies from college.
They probably didn't know who they were either.
A Marine?
I went to college in the 60s. Get a grip, Bob.
Yeah, so did I. Well,
one thing for employees, since we're on this subject of beneficiary forms, most agencies now have their personnel folders electronic where employees can access the records, go on there, and you'll find your beneficiary form for life insurance. You'll find your one for what's called unpaid compensation. You'll find the one for FERS retirement, but you won't find the one for civil service retirement because for whatever reason, that's maintained at the Office of Personnel Management. So my suggestion would be, if you're under the old retirement system, just file a new beneficiary form and send it to OPM. So that'll take place of the one you may have filed 35 years ago. And then the one for the Thrift Savings Plan, that's maintained at the Thrift. So that one you can find if you access your TSP account at tsp.gov. Or if you still have that participant statement that came in February, it's on the back of that form. So it's pretty easy for employees to update their beneficiary forms and find who they did initially designate, if anybody.
Sure.
Because not everybody filed the forms.
I sure hope that the listeners don't trivialize what you just said in their own minds or just thinking, well, that's a good idea, but I think I'm in good shape. The reason I say that is that I just recently was told the story in one of my workshops by one of the participants of their mother-in-law whose husband died. He was a retired Navy something, and so she called Bupers or whoever it is you get in touch with now, to find out how she gets her continuation of his check. And they said, oh, it's not a problem. Glad you called. Here's where you should send the death certificate. And they told her. And then they said, and by the way, what did you say your name is? And she said her name. It's a true story. They say, I believe it. I know this happens. And when she said her name, they said, that's not the name we have.
Uh-oh.
And she thought immediately, remembering that this was his second marriage.
Oh, boy.
And she said the name of the first wife. And they said, yeah, bingo, that's it. And
you're
then she
her.
Said, oh, no, he got remarried, and he told me he was going to change it. And the person on the other end, she said, got very nervous and said, we'll send you a letter.
Oh, no.
Basically, the letter said,
you're not
we cannot change it post-mortem. Mm-mm. It is not possible. The person that he wrote is who will get it. And so out of the blue, this woman who hadn't heard his name in 20-some years, no doubt, started getting checks for him. Good for her, bad for the widow. Because we know that happens, I think anyone listening ought to hear that as a cautionary tale. The fact is it can slip right by, and we think we've done things. And I, you know what? I from what this woman told me, she said she knew the husband very well. She said he was a sweet person who was well intentioned, not very detailed. Mm-hmm. And he probably thought he had done it.
Yep.
Because he kept saying, oh yeah, I know, I took care of that years ago.
Mm.
And he wasn't lying. He was simply mistaken.
Right. The other thing I think people should know is that if you're retired and then after retirement you get divorced, whatever you elected on your retirement as far as survivor benefits, that's void.
Yes.
So if you want that same spouse that you were married to when you retired, even though you might end up in divorce, if you want them to still get that survivor benefit, that has to go in the divorce decree because otherwise they get nothing.
Wow.
It goes to
we're talking feds. I had just last week this is an IRA. Now, this is important because there are a number of FERS people that transfer money from the thrift into an IRA. And the person made their estate the beneficiary. And this female client of mine said, what do I do? And I said, it's too late. You never make an estate. Generally, you don't. The beneficiary of an IRA, because then it gets to pay tax, whereas if it goes to an individual, it can be spread out over their lifetime. And this was not an insignificant amount of money. And
right.
It just blows up in 5 years. Anyway, so it can happen outside the thrift.
All these areas.
Yeah,
all these areas. Mike, I know that, you know, people are planning for retirement. we always focus on the money, making sure we have enough money to retire. But my opinion is, not see if you back me up on this, that I think we spend not enough time planning on our life after retirement, because we're going to have, what, 50, 60 hours a week of what was normally scheduled time that we're going to have to find something to fill up those hours.
Mm-hmm.
What do you tell somebody to get started on thinking about that issue?
There are a number of...
I know we have like 2 minutes left.
Yeah. let me quickly say that what's imperative are a couple things. One is a conversation that probably will have many parts to it that will go on for some period of time when there's a coupling. So the couple needs to have that conversation. If it's a single individual, then they need to talk to themselves or come talk to somebody.
Sit down and think about
what are all the, what's the constellation of possibilities? What would I most enjoy doing? What would I like to be doing? Start some of it, because some of it we can start before we actually retire. Things such as volunteer work, that kind of thing, to see if it's something we would enjoy.
Right.
And so take things out for a test ride and spend some time. But you're absolutely right. Without a plan, now what most people call that is an activity plan, a retirement activity plan, that which will be in my next book, a retirement activity plan which basically takes a 24-hour period, takes half of it out. Because if you do a pie chart, you take half of it out because you're sleeping and eating. That half. But the rest of it.
What do you do with the rest of it?
If you don't know how to fill that in, you need to talk to your significant other more, or you need to do some more personal planning.
Maybe each of you do your own pie chart and then compare them.
Yes.
See how different they are.
Yes.
Or how alike they are.
We have about a little bit more than a minute to go. Michael, final thoughts, comments, advice?
Well, primarily, as the last conversation implied, it's critical to not simply step out the door one day and assume that life will simply happen. That is reactive, and for most people, it doesn't work.
Yeah. Okay. Great. Thanks.
You're very
entertaining
welcome.
As always. You notice Tammy was more talkative than I. I'm just listening. Oh, wow. Tammy?
Don't put off till tomorrow what you can do today.
All right.
Wow.
Now, Tammy's...
that'll be in my next book.
There you go.
Tammy's not going to be here next week, right? But guest host John Elliott will be here with John Jellick, and we'll be talking financial planning, and probably, well, on the heels of this, this will be good.
So all the money bags listen.
Okay. Thanks for listening, and we'll see you next week. Bye-bye.
You've been listening to For Your Benefit, presented by NITP. Please tune in next Monday at 10 a.m. for a topic solely devoted to you, the federal employee. The show can also be heard 24/7 on federalnewsradio.com. Thanks for listening.